Hello everyone, I'm Omanjana. I'm a graduate student at the Department of Earth and Environmental Science at Rutgers University, Newark, and I'm going to be talking about heavy metal contamination in the urban soils of Newark, New Jersey. And it's only fitting I go last because we've been talking about contamination and urban soils all throughout. So my presentation is actually going to throw up some actual numbers that we found from soils in the community gardens. So if you look back at Newark, Newark is a predominantly post-industrial urban center, which has a population of about 280,000 people living in its five wards, and about 30% of the population actually live below the poverty line. So it's a poor, densely populated region, which has a lot of brownfield sites. But not only that, there's a major airport, major railway hub, and one of the largest ports of Northeast U.S. that is located in Newark, which makes Newark interesting industrially and interesting for us herbal scientists because we expect to see contamination in there. But as a post-industrial landscape, Newark actually is now trying to reclaim some of the unused vacant lots that lie in the city through its Adopt-a-Lot programs, where residents who are interested in urban farming can set up these nonprofits and lease land for as little as $1 a year and set up and establish community gardens in it that will eventually encourage families to come out and sort of act as a green social space for all of these student, youth, community-based engaging programs, essentially. But what happens, as we've been talking about it, is urban soils are not pristine. They're disturbed soils, especially in industrial zones which have seen the outflow of contaminants and eventually found their way to soil. And about 2 years back, I was looking to sort of look at numbers of contaminants in this soil. However, what happened was there were no numbers, so nobody had actually studied the extent of contamination in the urban soils of Newark, New Jersey. And as a graduate student, I found a project that nobody's done, and I jumped on the opportunity. And that sort of began our interest in this whole project, where we went out to the community gardens of Newark, 3 years of now, and studied the extent of heavy metal contamination in it. And as an environmental geoscientist, my primary interest was actually to see the distribution of metals, to study the mineral metal composition that sort of might be affecting bioavailability and livability of the metal. And thirdly, I wanted to evaluate the feasibility of struvite as a phosphate source for immobilizing some of the lead that is present, especially in the mobile fractions of the soil. Now, for all of those who don't know what struvite is actually a wastewater recovered phosphate mineral, and that can essentially act as a source of soluble phosphorus for some of the nearby lead to insolubilize as what I'm expecting as of now to be pyromorphized. I'll talk about it for the rest of the slide, for the rest of the presentation. Moving on to sampling, as of now we sampled from three community gardens in the city of Newark. One is located in the South Ward, and one from the Central, and one from the West. We follow the same scheme of sampling from these gardens, where we collected one composite sample from raised beds. All of these gardens actually grow stuff on the raised beds. One from any raised beds that were along the periphery of these gardens, especially along the periphery that they shared with the adjacent building or adjacent parking lots in most cases. One from the soil right next to the next building or the next vacant lot. They don't grow anything on this directly. I asked them, I spoke to the garden managers, but however, some herbs are grown and some strawberries in some gardens, so I just wanted to make sure that these values, the metal in these soils are okay. And lastly, I sampled compost samples from the two gardens that actually did composting in addition to doing the gardening. One of them has a vermicomposting facility, and the other just has like compost bins where they where they compost, I think, the restaurant waste. Once these soils were brought back to the laboratory, dried, saved, two kinds of extraction was done. The first was a total metal extraction using one molar nitric acid. I played it safe here. Just added 10 ml of nitric acid and let it shake for 2 hours. Our second scheme of extraction was much more exhaustive. We did the Tessier, the well-tried and tested Tessier method, where I was primarily interested in studying lead associated with the exchangeable acid-soluble, reducible, and oxidizable fraction, and just to see how these numbers look in the various fractions of the soil in the different gardens. I'd also looked at nickel, zinc, cadmium, and copper, but for the rest of the presentation, I'll actually focus on lead because I only have so much time. And lead, of course, is of primary interest here because of its known legacy of contamination in urban cities around the world. What's interesting is when we set up the immobilization experiment, this has previously not been done, which provides there are a host of other papers and studies in the past that has looked at immobilization using phosphoric acid, rock phosphate, but nobody's done this with struvite. So it was sort of a new approach to look at immobilization experiments, where I essentially just mixed a solid struvite in the ratio of the lead that it needed to form pyromorphite, and then added water to maintain the moisture, seal it off, and then there are two extractions to sort of study the effect of time for the amendment to work essentially. One was a 7-day, and the next one was right out at 2 months. And after the 7-day and 2 months, what I did was I collected the extractant from the first two fractions of the soil essentially to see how much lead is being removed from exchangeable and acid soluble, where the metal essentially tends to be more mobile as opposed to the reducible and oxidizable fractions, where it's a slightly more where it's less mobile and a more permanent association with soil minerals. These are how the numbers look. For site 1 and 2, there was a 1 and 2 samples respectively that exceeded the EPA guidance value of 400 ppm. Site 3, there are no samples that exceed the EPA value of 400 ppm, which is good. And site 3, when we look back at the land use history, site 3 is a completely new garden. It's just been established a year back. So all of the soil has actually been commercially purchased, and it is my interest to actually go out maybe to the same site a couple of years later to see how these numbers shape up then. But looking at site 1 and site 2, the samples that report these concentrations are actually right next to the building and fence and parking lot. So if we think of the source of these contaminants or the origin, it is primarily, to my belief, anthropogenic. And lead in soil fractions. This was interesting because I didn't expect such high numbers that we see here. For the first site, the most amount of lead is actually present in the acid-soluble carbonate fractions. So these are associated with carbonate minerals. And metal from this fraction can be mobile if there's a change in pH. Now, a lot of the residents, the raised beds here and the cultivated ground here is actually managed by residents as opposed to a single gardener. So a lot of these residents come out on weekends and do independent treatments. So the gardener is not aware of what's going on in a raised bed that's owned by a person. So what happens is if somebody changes the pH, it affects the soil chemistry, which might ultimately release some of this metal. And if it releases the metal, it has a chance to be more bioaccessible, more bioavailable for the plants that's growing on it. And looking at the sample that has reported such high values, it is again the same building sample that we saw has a high total lead. And here as well, there are high values of lead in all of the fractions for that same sample. So I think at this point it's safe to conclude that most of the lead that is seen for this fraction, for this sample, is primarily anthropogenic. For Site 2, the exchangeable values were very less, which was good because the site is characterized by slightly higher concentrations in all of the fractions that we see, except for the exchangeable. And when I look back at where the site is, it is located right next to a major highway of the city, and it sees a lot of vehicular traffic during the day. Right next to the site is also a parking lot. And all of the days that I've been to the site, that parking lot has been full. So obviously, vehicular traffic, vehicles, emissions play a huge role in the numbers that can be seen here. And for most of the fractions, the numbers are in the range of 1,000 ppm and above. Especially samples near the parking lot and the restaurant. So when I finally look back at these numbers and think of the source of contamination of all of this, I'm concluding that it's anthropogenic. For Site 3, lead, these are the lowest values of lead that I've seen so far in all of the samples that I've analyzed, and it's attributed, I attributed it to the fact that this was a newly established garden. All of the soil that is seen here is commercially purchased from a single vendor, and it's just been set up. So it would be of interest to see how these numbers fare after a few years of being in business. Struvite was interesting because nobody's done this before, and it's new data that you're looking at. Lead, after about a week of letting struvite react with our soil, there was a reduction of 14% and 54% lead from the acid-soluble and exchangeable fractions, whereby after letting it react for about 2 weeks, the same fractions report a reduction of 80% and 89%. So definitely some of the mobile lead, some of the exchangeable and acid-soluble lead has been immobilized by struvite. However, I could not characterize it as pyromorphite, probably because the numbers I'm looking at here is fairly low. So that forms the next part of my study, is to actually see how much struvite is interacting with this lead and to characterize the product that's forming. I'm drawing a couple of common conclusions that that can be derived from all of my experimentation is the fact that yes, at this point I can claim that Newark soils are contaminated, urban soils are contaminated, to the extent that all samples that we've collected have detectable concentrations of lead, some of them exceeding the EPA value of 400 ppm. And possible sources of contamination are primarily anthropogenic because of high industrial activity in the area and because of legacy contaminants that has been associated with Newark for the last 100 or so years. Newark actually had its Agent Orange factory. So if anybody is interested in looking at organic contaminants, please do go out. We don't have a group that's yet characterizing organic contaminants. And lastly, struvite does show promise for being used as an immobilizing agent, and forms a major part of my future research, where I would characterize some of this spectroscopically, going to the beamline at BNL and studying some of the struvite metal complexes that's been formed in the soil. And with that, I would like to thank my advisor, Dr. Zaki Roth, for giving me this opportunity to do this research. And the undergrads that have helped me, and all of my funders who've paid for me to do this research. So, thank you.
Questions?
Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. I have read in a couple of different places that there's a lot of concern surrounding Tessier's sequential extraction. Have you heard about that, or were you concerned about that?
When I started the Tessier extraction, I did not know much about soil science, to be honest, because I am an environmental geochemist. So I was primarily actually studying struvite investigation with these metals as to how they are in wastewater. When I found that lead, struvite sucking up a lot of lead right away because of the low solubility of lead phosphates, and I wanted to plug that in with urban soils, but I came on to realize that all of these methods of extraction might not be completely foolproof. There is no, like you said in your presentation, no gold standard. I just use this, the Tessier method, because it's been fairly well used, well documented over the years. And we had all of the chemicals and the technology to do it, essentially. So it was convenient, if I had to answer it in one word.
Yeah. I was curious about, on some of your sites, the origin of the soil. I mean, so for example, there are a lot of raised beds, and was that soil brought in from elsewhere, and do you know what the source of it was?
Yeah, so for site two, they usually top off all of their raised bed soil every few years that's bought from this one commercial vendor. But site one is slightly more complicated in the sense that these raised beds are individually managed by residents. So everybody just buys in whatever they want. So characterizing the source of that would be difficult. And site one, we went out to the city hall and looked at all of the land deeds. Site one has been primarily land, church-owned land. It's surrounded by a church, and there was a church on it. Rebuilt a couple of times, raised to the ground. So, yeah, I mean, it's difficult knowing where each of these residents are buying. I've spoken to the garden manager where they're buying their topsoil from. Site 2 and 3, they buy it in bulk for the entire garden, so I know the brand they're buying it of.
Pardon me for being a little dense, but why were the sum of your individual fractions of lead so much greater than total lead?
What I would believe is I'm using the one molar nitric acid extraction, and that's probably not as strong an acid as what it is in the Tessier extraction. I'm actually going back to this using now the EPA 3050.
Okay. Right. I was assuming you used 3050.
No, this is the one molar. This is a one molar because at that time, like I said, it was convenient. But I'm now going to correlate this with the 3050.
I have a question on struvite. You know, for struvite to remain in solid form, precipitate, it has to be like alkaline pH. So, but you are adding it to the soil, and it's also giving extraction. So it's like
a change in pH.
What's the mechanism of this? Is it complexation, or is it absorption?
That is what I need to look at when I'm going to the synchrotron facility. Struvite actually reacts with metals through two pathways, primarily complexation and through precipitation. Precipitation usually happens at the alkaline pH range, and complexation is more acidic. So I did not change the pH in these immobilization experiments. I wanted them to react at or near whatever pH these soils were at, which was in the range of about 6 to 7. Struvite dissolution actually slightly increased the pH. After about 2 hours of being added to the soil, I did a pH reading. Yeah, what the exact mechanism, I'm going to talk about it maybe at the San Diego meeting. But I'm expecting it to be more...
You're not seeing any phosphorus release?
No.
There are questions?
Thank you.